Welcome back, everyone, to Aspire, the Leadership Development Podcast, where we will be discussing the visions, inspirations, and experiences from top educational leaders. My name is Joshua Stamper, and you can connect with me on Twitter or on Instagram at Joshua_Stamper. This week, I am beyond thrilled to be joined by Shelley Burgess, best known as the co-author of Lead Like a Pirate and full-time partner at Dave Burgess Consulting, Inc. Shelley has also served as an award-winning teacher, principal, director of student achievement, and assistant superintendent of educational leadership. Shelley, thank you so much for joining us today.
I am honored to be here. Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
And Shelley, as you know, the show is centered on leadership development, and I would love to hear your personal journey and how you became an administrator.
Well, you shared a couple of the roles that I've had in the bio, but I actually, when I started teaching, I thought that's what I was going to do. I kind of fell backwards into teaching when I was in college. It wasn't necessarily what I wanted to do. Both my parents were educators. You know, you sort of push away from, you know, what it is that they were doing. And so I was actually on a whole different path. I was actually wanting to be a clinical psychologist, actually, when I first started. And then kind of backed into education for a variety of reasons, fell in love with teaching and thought that that is where I was going to stay. And so before I was even aware that I had any leadership potential, I actually had a principal, my second school that I was at. I was 1 year at one school and then sort of settled in at another school. And she really tapped me on the shoulder pretty early on for some leadership roles in the school and ultimately asked me to leave the classroom and serve as an English language arts resource teacher at running some of the Title I programs and those kinds of things at the school level. And it kind of grew from there. It started, like I said, it wasn't where I was planning to go or what I was planning to do. And, you know, I moved from there really into another sort of administrative role at a district office level and eventually moved on. I actually changed districts to become a principal. I didn't know, again, same kind of thing. I didn't know exactly that that's what was going to happen. I was actually looking at the time within my district to be an assistant principal because I was working in a leadership role at the district office. I really wanted to get back to a site. I wanted to work, be back in school, sort of the hub of, you know, where everything happens. I missed kids. I missed working with teachers. And so I was really interested in stepping into an assistant principal role within my system. And actually at the time, I had been working with, she's wonderful, woman in education. She's done an amazing work for educators across the country. Her name is Carolyn Downey. And she was a consultant working in the system. And she was instrumental for me. Actually, again, it was, you know, I was ready to do an assistant principal role. And she was instrumental in saying, you know what? Maybe not that. There, I know where some principal openings are, and I think maybe you should try for that. I think that's where you need to be. So same kind of thing, you know, people who saw some potential in me that I was very grateful for. And I took a job as an elementary school principal. I was very honored to get that job in a new system and actually fell in love with it. As much as I love teaching, boy, did I love being a principal. What a phenomenal role. Challenging, but I love the challenge. That was such a great opportunity to work with not only all the things you get to do to influence students, but the opportunity to work with the adults who are in the trenches with students in classrooms every single day and the opportunity to really roll up my sleeves and dig into that great work of teaching and learning with this whole staff of teachers was phenomenal. And then I moved from there, actually same thing, kind of a, hey, you know, we'd had some success at our school and I ultimately moved into within the same system, a director of student achievement, which was really primary role of that was a principal coach, was principal coaching. And then eventually from there became assistant superintendent of educational leadership, also in the same system. That was also principal coaching and curriculum instruction, all, you know, sort of all the things that wrap into that role. And so that was really my journey. And I eventually left. I'm not there anymore because now Dave and I run the publishing and consulting company. But that's it. That's my journey.
Oh, I wouldn't say that's it. That's wonderful. That's a huge career there. And I just want to go back to the beginning part, going from, I think you said an instructional coach to a principal. What was the largest misconception as you began your administrative experience?
That's a really good question. I think there's a shift that you have to make when you move from spending most of your time, you know, in your own classroom or in your own office or working with, you know, a handful of colleagues and moving into a position. And it was noticeable the most to me when I started as a principal. But I think a lot of us enter into administration and you think everybody teaches like me, or everybody, you know, that you have sort of this picture in your head of what classrooms look like because you built your classroom and you just make, you know, you make assumptions about that. And so the shift for me, but wow, you know, and boy, I've learned a ton from all the classrooms that I've been in, but that's a big shift. There's my way that I did things, but there's also thousands of other ways that people do things that are, you know, sometimes amazing, some, you know, sometimes in reality, you know, sometimes not so, you know, I didn't know that, that people really did that. And so there's, you know, some work we need to do there. But I think that was a really big shift. And I think another one for me is sort of finding your bearings in that and understanding pedagogy at a level that's so much greater even than when you were teaching in the classroom, because you have exposure to all the vastness of knowledge of whole groups of teachers that are within a school that you serve. So that was a huge shift for me, and really adjusting to that. And how do you take what you know about good pedagogy and marry it with all the other things that your staff knows and creates, you know, an instructional program going forward, you know, with your school. So that was a big shift. And I think another one is kind of finding yourself and finding who you are as a leader. I think a lot of times people step into a role like a principal with a expectation that you have to be expert in everything. You have this feeling that, oh my gosh, you know, people are going to find me out. They're going to realize that I don't know everything, that I don't know how to do everything, that I'm not the best at this or the best at that. It was huge for me when I started the principal role. I started in a secondary system. So I worked in middle school and high schools. And then when I took my principal job, it was in elementary school. I didn't know the first thing about teaching kids to read, to be honest. So like I'd never taught a kid to read. I never. And so there's that little bit of within yourself feeling like, oh my gosh, they're gonna find me out and they're gonna realize I'm a fraud here. But it's a journey, I think, to realize, to let that go, and to you don't have to be expert in everything. What you need to be is confident in who you are and what you know, and then confident enough to be okay with, hey, there's stuff I don't know. And there's stuff that my crew knows, that my team knows, that my teacher knows. I learned so much about how to teach kids to read. One, I did a whole lot of learning about it on my own, but I really learned a ton from just going and sitting in kindergarten classrooms, in first grade classrooms, and asking my teachers, what are you doing when you're doing that? What does that mean? Why did you, and really engaging in dialogue and acknowledging and realizing that there is expertise all around me, and that it's okay to be vulnerable and authentic and real and not have to carry the weight of everything on your shoulders. And I think that's something that happens to a lot of administrators early in their career, is feeling like they have to go it alone, and that it's okay to tap into all of the awesomeness that is around you and let them teach you as much as you hopefully can teach and work with them, that it's a partnership.
How did you help your teachers grow in their knowledge and teaching strategies, especially when you went into classrooms and saw things that maybe needed to adjust?
Yeah, well, we actually had a lot of adjustments we had to make when I was a principal. We test score wise, not that it's the only measure, but it's an important measure, and it's one you got to pay attention to when you are a principal. We really didn't have anywhere to go in our scores except for up. Our school was really struggling on by every measure, every label, every, you know, the school was struggling. And so there was an urgency around what does our instructional program look like, and what are we doing, and how are we serving our kids in our classrooms? I think there's a couple of things about how you go about that. I think one of the things I realized pretty early on is that, honestly, the fear of testing in a school like ours, where test scores had become so prominent in communities, we'd been labeled a failing school, you know, all those things that happen to schools across the country. I think that there was a lot of fear in teachers, and what that turned into, unfortunately, for a while, wasn't better instruction. It was almost worse instruction. You know, I'd walk into classrooms my first year and I'd walk in and you'd see test prep packet after test prep packet after test prep packet. And there's this urgency around this test as opposed to an urgency around creating awesome experiences for kids. And so I think that for us, one of the first things was, let's acknowledge that that's what's going on. Is this what you want for your own kids? Is this what you want? Like, so what do we want? And I think that part of working with your team to define what does an awesome experience for kids in a classroom look like? There's all kinds of things you can look at around vision, you know, vision and mission. And I think sometimes, you know, ad nauseum, but the reality is if you really do that work well and you do it together and you really highlight, like, this is what we want to be. So that was really part of the first step. What do we want to happen here for kids? What are we missing? What are things you wish you could be teaching in your classrooms that you're not because this test is hanging over your head? So I think that really is step one, is acknowledging as a leader, yeah, we got a test, but that's a one-time thing and that we're in charge, all of us collectively, we're in charge of creating the program that we want kids to experience within our school. And so enlisting people from the very beginning in what that is makes people a lot more open to the dialogue, the conversation, the observations, the feedback, because we've created some common positive energy around the type of school that we want to create. It's not just a principal vision for the school, it's a collective vision. It's also an acknowledgement that if we want to get there, right? So if this is where we want to be, you know, the next question for me that is really important is, so then what do we need to learn? So if we want to be here, and these are the things we want happening, what are the learning experiences that we need for ourselves as a group of adults so that we can get to where we want to be? And I think that that's a mistake that we make sometimes in education. I think especially when we're in situations of budget crisis and budget cuts, that one of the first things we do is slash the budgets for professional learning. For me and at our school, it's the opposite. That's what you protect. You protect the resources that you have so you can learn and grow together as a staff. We're a place of learning. And our kids learn and we as adults learn. And so when you can get that established and you enlist people in the vision, the things like the classroom observations, the feedback, the walkthroughs, the dialogue is all connected back to that. This is what we want and we're all learners. I think that's where you got to start. You can't just start by announcing, here I am, I'm your principal, I'm coming in your classrooms, and start to have feedback conversations in the absence of some common goals and common around what teaching and learning should look like. And so that first step, I think, is really, really critical.
So when you first began your journey as an administrator, what is one area you wanted to change in education?
Equity, access. I think that one of the things that was evident at the time in multiple schools that I had been in is that we didn't have the same expectations. There weren't the same expectations in some of our schools for the students that we were serving. Making sure that all kids had access to high-level instruction, to high-level curriculum, to things that push thinking and challenge thinking and push them was really, really important to me. I think there was a lot of things that I saw in the beginning where and over time, you know, we started to talk about it in different, you know, we started to talk about Webb's depth of knowledge. We started to talk about, you know, ways that you kind of label the types of thinking that kids are doing. We were so low level in what we were expecting of kids. And kids are capable of so much more than we sometimes give them credit for. Every kid. I think there's a tendency sometimes to track kids, to keep kids back to, oh, you need the remedial this or the remedial. And I, stripping that away and figuring out how do we give all kids access to high level thinking, high level curriculum, awesome instruction. And then what supports might we need to build in, but stripping that away, I don't think is the right thing. And so for me, that was a really big deal. It's been a big deal to me really my whole career, but definitely on my leadership journey, it was a huge thing for me.
You were a principal. Obviously, you absolutely love kids. I can tell in every answer, it's all about kids. So did someone come to you about the director position, or did you always aspire to be in the administrative office?
Yeah, you know, I did not aspire, just like I never really aspired. I didn't really aspire to be a teacher. I wasn't really at the top of my list to be a principal. No, central office was not necessarily on my mind. So one of the things that I learned that I really love, in addition to students and all the influence that you can have as a principal on programs and curriculum and instruction for students, I love that. But I also fell in love with the piece of the work that is about supporting adults. And I know in Lead Like a Pirate, actually, we have a chapter where that's really near and dear to our hearts, where we talk about this idea of doing what's best for kids. And what does that mean in the role that you hold in your system? And I do really believe where we do our best work for kids in a role of like a principal is in the work that we do to support and influence and inspire the adults. Because we can't teach every kid. You know, I had 750 students in my elementary school. I can't teach them all. But what I can do is create conditions and learning and all of those things for the adults that influence what they do in their classrooms. And so what I found is that I love coaching and working with adults. I think I'm pretty good at it. So, you know, and I've had a lot of experience. I've had some great teachers. I've learned from some phenomenal people on how to build my own skill set around coaching. And so that was one of the things I loved the most about being a principal, was opportunities to be in classrooms, engage in coaching dialogues with teachers, to be at grade level team meetings. And I loved that piece. And so when I moved to central office, that was a big part of the role, because it was a role where a lot of the work was being able to do that with principals. I actually had administration in my system that believed really strongly. And I don't know that this is the case in every system, but in my system, my superintendent really believed in supporting principals and really believed in supporting the educational leaders in the system. So she allowed for the positions in central office to develop in a way that coaching, that, you know, she didn't want us to sit behind our desks all day. I mean, so being in schools was really important, and being able to support the work in schools was really important to her. And so I think it was fortunate to be in a system where I could take that thing I loved around coaching and be able to apply it just at a different level.
And for those who are aspiring to be administrators, maybe they're in a teacher role or an assistant principal role, trying to become a principal, what advice do you have for them?
Every day is a job interview, especially if you want to be an administrator in your system. If you want to be an assistant principal in your system, if you want to be a principal in your system, every day is a job interview. So you got to bring it every day. And people are figuring out who you are, even if you're not in that technically leadership role yet. The things you do, that you are exhibiting the qualities that people are looking for in a principal or in an assistant principal, whatever that next step you might be, that every day is a job. And some of the stuff sticks with you, you know? So you have to, if you're thinking about it, you got to be cognizant of it and the interactions you have. So that's maybe not the advice that people always give, but I do think that it's important. And then the other thing that I would tell you is don't settle. I think what you've got to figure out is, I want to be an assistant principal, or I want to be a principal in a school or in a system that believes in this, or that thinks that this is really important. I think where I see things go wrong the most is that people really want the job, and they end up in a system where it's not a good fit. And so there are so many different ways that schools and systems run. And you have systems where everything is so heavy site-based leadership. You know, you have ones that are so far on like the whole system here, and everybody does kind of the same thing. And you have everything in between. And you have schools and systems that are super far on the innovation, tech integration play. And then you have others that still, you know, ban cell cell phones and filter, don't let you have Google Hang, Google, you know, on your computer. And so I think it's really do your due diligence and don't accept a job in a system that isn't a match for your belief about what education should be. And so find a place where it's a good fit. And I think the other piece of that is find a place that believes in supporting their leaders. Too many places are sink and swim. I think we've gotten better about that with teachers and not letting teachers sink or swim. I think there was a time where we did let them do that. Certainly when I started as a teacher, that was the case. I didn't have anyone observe me my entire first year. But I think that happens to leaders too often now. There are enough systems around that do support and coach and give and mentor new leaders. And I think that that's an important piece too. A third thing is don't be afraid to be you. If you can't be you, if you feel like you have to answer an interview question that isn't true to who you are, if you feel like, you know, you've got to be you. There was a big weight lifted off my shoulders. The point in time that I realized, like, it's okay to just be me. It's okay. I don't have to do it anybody else's way. I have to be a continuous learner. I have to learn from other people. I have to, but I can also just be me. And so I think that that is another piece of advice. Don't try to be somebody that you aren't. Be true to who you are.
So I want to know the story behind moving from the administrative position, the assistant superintendent, to your current role now at DBC Inc.
That was a pretty hard decision because I've loved every minute that I've worked in schools and in systems. And it was really, really hard. That was more of a personal family business decision in sort of where Dave and I were. So he had been teaching, you know, and he wrote Teach Like a Pirate. Teach Like a Pirate took off. So he'd taken a leave of absence and, you know, was speaking all over and doing, you know, those kinds of things. We had this kind of dog walk brainstorm at one point to start the publishing company in reaction to, you know, Dave, when he did Teach Like a Pirate and when we published it ourselves for a whole, that could be a whole other podcast about that decision. But because we did that and because Teach Like a Pirate had so much success, there were lots of people, especially that Dave was connected to, who, you know, how did you do this? How did you do this? How did you make this happen? And lots of reasons people didn't want to self-publish. Anyway, so it was really like walking our dogs. Like, we can do this for people. Like, come on, like, we got this. So we started the company, started small, and all this was happening while I was still in the assistant superintendent role. Dave was more and more traveling, speaking. We had young kids. So before Dave started doing all the traveling and speaking, we had this like great system with the kid, you know, like he would head off to school. Like I'd get the kids ready, get them off, you know, the kids would be out of school. Dave would pick them up. Like, you know, we had all these, like, we just had it all worked out. And then work changed and what he was doing. And, you know, he'd be gone for a week and I'd be home and working 12-hour days. And, you know, this is so embarrassing to say, but it's also part of being real, right? So this was, I think, one of the times where it really hit me. I got that call that I've made, my office staff had made many times. I was the parent that this time I got the call from my daughter's elementary school. And it was one of those, it was minimum day and nobody would pick my daughter up. Oh. It was like, oh my God. You know, because like I missed it, you know, I hadn't arranged for, you know, her. And so that was going on. And then at the same time, we were trying to build the company. And as we were taking on more and more books, it really required full-time attention. And so it was kind of a combination of all those things at the same time that really were, you know what, it might be time to take a step out of the role and focus on the business and focus on the kids. And, you know, I'd been in administration. I started as a principal. I was 31. My son was 2 when I was pregnant with my daughter. So I'd been an administrator their whole lives. Mm-hmm. So there was something personal about that too, for me to get some time with my kids. And now my son's a senior in high school. He's going to be gone, you know, so kind of all those things pushed together caused the shift. And Dave and I love what we do now. There are certainly aspects I miss about being in a school system, but we love what we do.
So that totally goes into Lead Like a Pirate. And I was so fortunate to have Beth Huff on the show and she talked about the book. So I don't want to dive too much into the book, but I did have a question. It's always been something I wanted to ask. Why did you start the book off with passion?
Because that's it, isn't it? I mean, that if we don't have a passion for students and student learning, and it's not even that, it's just this passion for the idea that educators and education, like education is life-changing for kids, for communities, for families. It's not the kind of thing that you should do, or I don't even think can do, at least not very well, if you approach any role in education as it's a job. It's a soul-searching profession. It's an amazing profession, but there are heart-wrenching moments. It can be emotionally draining. It can be you sacrifice things at home. If you don't have passion for this work, and it's just how you get up and do it every day. You know, I don't know how you do that, and I don't know how you do that well, because it's a job that's never done. You live it, you breathe it, you bring those kids home with you. You know, they keep you up at night. It's just, you have to love what you do. You have to love this business, and you have to really value the work that educators do. And I think way too often right now, educators, schools, school systems just get beat down and beat up. And if you don't truly believe in what you're doing, and you don't have a passion, like, find something else to do that's gonna pay you better and maybe not give you as much grief, right? So that's where it starts. I think it's the passion too that helps you set really clear vision and set really clear goals. And it pushes you to just never settle. And it pushes you to not stay status quo. I think passion pushes you to greatness for yourself, for your staff, for your students, for your school, for your community. And then I think passion also brings with it this idea that greatness is never achieved, right? Like, so there's always somewhere else you can go. That's the driving force behind this work.
So. Well, I thought it was a perfect start to the book. For the listeners, if you haven't read Lead Like a Pirate, I highly suggest it. And then Shelley, in closing, what do you think is the most joyful thing about being a leader?
It's the work that we get to do around culture. So this, you can do this as a leader in your classroom with your students. You can do it as a, you know, principal with students, with staff. But it's that pushing people and when I say pushing, it's not beating people down. It's not shoving them. It's pushing people to a place where they realize that even that within themselves, there's so much that they're capable of. There's so much that, given the right support, it's just that piece of taking people to places that they never really thought they were going to go or did, and doing that collaboratively and doing that as a team. I that is one of the things that I love about leadership, is this helping people see there's no limits, helping, you know, building that sense of agency or building that self-efficacy, you know, that it isn't like all these things that we have control of and all these things that we have it in us, you know? So I think that's the other piece of it, is that it really is up to us. A program's not going to solve it. It's us, and we have it. And we talk about it in the book, and I say this, Beth says this, Dave says, I mean, it's people, it's not programs. And so convincing people that we have it within us to make all that. We don't need other people. We don't need other stuff. We don't need, you know, we need to dig deep in ourselves, because it's in us. And so I think that's one of the things that I love most about leadership is helping people and working alongside people to realize that, yeah, like we do have this. Mm-hmm. We have the capacity and the willingness, the capacity, the capability to roll up our sleeves and do amazing things for kids.
And so how can our listeners connect with you on social media?
Professionally, social media for me usually is Twitter. And so that's at Burgess underscore Shelly, and it's Shelly with an EY at the end. I have same, the at Burgess Shelly on Instagram, but if you follow me on Instagram, you're going to see lots of pictures of things like going to concerts with my daughter, or, you know, a picture of something I ate on a trip. Twitter for sure, professionally, we're there every day. The hashtag that we use to talk about the leadership principles in the book is hashtag LeadLap. So lead, L-A-P, for sure. That is a place to connect with us. We also have a website, leadlikeapirate.net. So there's a place you can subscribe to our blogs and newsletters. It's actually, I think it's undergoing as we speak, a little bit of a revamp, but it'll be up and running. If it's not up and running now, it will be in, you know, the next 24 hours or so. But those are some of the best ways.
LeadLap also has a chat also on Saturday mornings, correct?
We do. Yeah, we absolutely do. Thank you. So we do Saturday mornings. It's 7:30 a.m. Pacific time. So 10:30 a.m. for people on the East Coast. We chat for an hour. Sometimes I moderate, sometimes Beth moderates, sometimes both of us do. And then we have guest moderators all the time. Always topics in leadership. And when we talk leadership, one of the things we believe in very, very strongly is that you can lead from any position that you're in. So it's not, you don't have to hold a leadership, typical leadership title. There's anyone who's interested in any concepts of leadership and teaching and learning. That's what we're chatting about Saturday mornings. So thanks for bringing that up too.
Oh, most definitely. And if our listeners are looking for leadership development, that is definitely a place to go on Saturday mornings. So please continue to check out the Aspire podcast on SoundCloud and iTunes and share your ratings and reviews. Don't forget to use the Aspire Lead hashtag as you continue the conversation on Twitter. Shelly, thank you so much for being on the program.
Thank you so much for having me. It's great to talk with you.